Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 74 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great 3 weeks of gaming in the gaming capital of the world. How you doing, Cody?
Doing all right. And it is the gaming capital of the world.
It is.
Just not that we need to confirm it.
No.
But
no.
Certain voices in the podcast world.
It's come into question that Indianapolis is the gaming capital of the world. And just real briefly, before we get into everything, I just want to say, Gen Con is in Indianapolis.
Yes.
Cody and John live in Indianapolis.
Beautiful Indianapolis.
Jeremy Salinas, Drakenstrike, a member of a certain podcasting network that you may have heard of, lives in Indianapolis.
In HD.
The Spiel podcast, another fine podcast, not on any particular network whatsoever, in Indianapolis. Really, I could keep going on, but...
Yeah, no, there's no need.
No.
So just to reiterate, the gaming capital of the world.
Okay.
Very good. Not the professional football capital of the world.
No, in no way.
I mean, after that nail-biter in New Orleans, you know, I thought the Colts were going to pull one out.
No. Nah.
I watched that whole game.
Did you really?
I wanted to see how high it would go. Can the Saints hang 90 points on the Colts? Let's find out.
I watched the World Series game, which is going on at the same time, watching my Texas Rangers, win out another one. But by the time this has come out, the series will be completed, and hopefully the Texas Rangers have won. I've already put in for my hat. I'm getting a hat of Texas Rangers baseball cap.
Nice.
So it's on order. And
did that come with the bandwagon seat, or did you have to? Did you have to pay extra for it?
I knew you were going to do that. I've been a Texas Rangers fan for a long time. And you know what? You, Mr. Midwesterner, was trying to convert me passively into a Cincinnati Reds fan.
And I believe you bought a Cincinnati Reds hat.
I know. Look how brainwashed I was. But okay. No, I've come back home. Texas, I'm home.
And not because they're just doing well these past few years. Certainly not. Well, that's not the reason you've come back around.
That's the catalyst for it, but that's not a bad reason to go back to a team, as long as you stay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Hey, well, let's talk about...
Bandwagon.
Okay, listen. Let's talk about other kinds of games. That's what this podcast is actually about.
That's right.
Cody, what are we talking about this episode?
Well, we're going to give you one of our big rundowns, probably the biggest rundown of the year. We were back home from Extra Life. We successfully lived free. We did not die.
As you can see by the presence of us on the show.
That's right. And so we're going to give you our big rundown, and we're going to give you a shotgun blast of reviews.
That's right.
As it were.
Yep, you know, we're famous for kind of, well, not famous, we do the mid-size reviews. You know, you got the big hour-long reviews, you got the little micro reviews. We're kind of in the middle there.
What would the Starbucks size for that is? Because they have a tall, which is the small. What's the middle one?
The grande.
Grande and venti.
And the venti,
we're the grande.
We're the grand. And so, you know, we're going to try to go a little bit more tall and less grande on this episode and give you a review of several games, so stay tuned for that. But, you know, we got this gigantic Extra Life size rundown to start off with, and that starts
now.
All right, so it's time for the rundown, but before we get started with that, we have to pause, as always, to give thanks and do penance to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. Cody, tell us about Myriad.
Well, it was great to visit them. It's great to visit the mothership once a year. And we want to thank Dan, Sarah, and all the staff at Myriad Games for their hospitality and for treating us like one of the crew while we were there.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah, and, you know, it just seeing it just reaffirms everything we say. You know, if you want great stock, great service, great selection, and great game guides, you can't go wrong with Myriad Games. So check out MyriadGames.com and get an MVP membership today.
You know, if you're local and you go into a Myriad Games, one of the things that they have that you wouldn't know if you didn't actually walk in there is they've got a wide selection of snacks and like a big drink, like a full drink cooler.
The frosty beverages.
Okay, the frosty beverages. And I wanted to say real quick, because while we were at Extra Life, there's this beverage in New England called Moxie.
Ah, yes.
And did you try it?
No.
Okay, so there's this beverage called Moxie, and I kept asking about it because there was a guy that was at Extra Life who had a Moxie t-shirt, and every time I would mention it to them, I would get this look. It's kind of like when someone talks about White Castle here in Indiana.
Yeah.
People either go, oh, White Castle, it's awesome, or they'll say, oh, White Castle.
Intelligent people go,
you don't really want to go anywhere near that.
That's
you know?
Right.
And that's the way it was with this. And so I said, well, I want to try one of these. And they said, we'll buy it for you. the guys were all like, we'll buy it. And so I went and got one, and they were literally gathered around me. And one guy, I think it might have been our buddy Jay, was filming my reaction.
Oh, like, we have to find this video.
I know, right? And so I took a sip of it, because I guess they don't normally see people who haven't tasted this before. Mm-hmm. And I took a sip of it, and man, it was terrible.
What did it taste like?
It tasted kind of like, it tasted to me like old soda. Like you leave a Coke out for a really, really, really long time. And then you mix in with that bad, stale Coke, like a bunch of cough syrup. And that's pretty much what it tasted like.
Nice.
And it had that taste to it, kind of like, it felt very old school, like, you know, licorice, like black licorice. You know, not too many people like that. But back in the old days, that was a really popular thing. I think it's the same thing with this. This is a popular drink. And anyway, I just thought it was really funny. And I know I kind of screwed my face up and had the interesting reaction to it. They all thought it was very funny. So it took me about three sips to really realize that, oh, this is really quite bad. So Moxie, one of the fine frosty beverages available at Myriad Games.
Bring it on around. That's right. So visit MyriadGames.com today.
All right. So let's start talking about Extra Life. Big weekend. And we actually, as you may have noticed if you're a regular listener, delayed our episode for a week to sort of recover from Extra Life. And so, you know, Cody, why don't you – you want to kick it off or you want me to kick it off?
You got there first.
That's true. I did. We didn't – last year we traveled together by airplane.
Uh-huh.
This year we went a little bit of a different route. I flew in on Friday morning and left on Sunday morning.
Uh-huh.
Whereas Cody took the rollicking road trip across the country with Dan and Sarah from Myriad.
That's right. Dan and Sarah were in the Midwest for some, I think they visited Fantasy Flight, and then they had a trade show in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So they were in my neck of the woods, and they said, hey, this was a month or so before Extra Life, you just want to ride with us back to New Hampshire and, you know, fly back home. And I'm not very good. I'm good with geography and directions, but I'm not so good at estimating time. So I'm like, oh, Indianapolis, New Hampshire, that's probably like 7 hours. You know, just knock out that in one day. No, it's a 15-hour drive.
Wow.
So won't be doing that again. No knock to Dan and Sarah, but
no, that's
goodness
long,
gracious, that's a long road trip.
A long trip, yeah.
I'm pretty much like anything past 6 or 7 hours, I fly. So
yeah, my plane left Indy at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I got there a little bit before noon.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So I got into town. I went in and rented a car because I knew I would have the whole afternoon and evening free, like, since Extra Life didn't start until Saturday. So I went to both Myriad Games locations just to sort of check them out, and you know, I've seen them before, but always amazed when I go into Myriad. They just have the absolute best selection of any game store that I've ever been in. They seem to have one of everything. And a lot of stuff that I'd seen on Board Game Geek, new things that had come out, or even just things that weren't super popular that had come out, you know, I was finding copies of those things on the shelf. You may remember from our interview with Scott Nicholson, he mentioned that he had seen a copy of Tulip Mania in the store there, and I saw maybe that copy in both stores. They had a copy of Tulip Mania in each, the Salem and the Manchester store. So stopped in to see that, got checked into the hotel, and then I was thinking about driving to Boston because I'd never been there before and just kind of experiencing that. Unfortunately, it was really rainy that day, and so I didn't really want to travel that far, and I was unfamiliar with the roads. So I ended up driving down to Nashua, New Hampshire.
Beautiful.
And yes,
it was fine.
I really, the trip down there was nice. I mean, the leaf peeping, there were leaves to be peeped, I guess.
Oh, I have to say, you know, one kind of highlight of the road trip, I'd never really been to Pennsylvania and Western New York.
Yeah.
That's some pretty country out
there.
It's
nice,
you know?
Yeah.
Like hills? That's
imagine that. And so I ended up just spending the afternoon in Nashville going to the movies. I know that seems lame to fly to another state. And
John Richard,
movies,
world traveler.
Yeah, I know. But it was raining and just crappy out. And I just, you know. So I went to this place, Chunky's, that we went to last year. That's sort of a combination movie theater and restaurant where you can sit in these giant plush chairs and eat your food while you're watching the movie. So I went and saw the movie The Ides of March, which if you like political dramas, it was real good.
I'd like to see that one.
It was a good one, good movie. Right after that, I was able to get together with Russ Wakelin from the D6 Generation. Turns out he lives just 2 miles down the road from the Chunkies in Nashua. And so we had arranged for me to get together with him and his daughters to play some games and just kind of hang out on Friday night. So I went over to his house and we played a game of Zuloretto.
Mm.
All four of us, he and his two daughters, I think ages 9 and 7 or something like that. And it was a lot of fun. Russ destroyed us all. And which I thought was kind of mean, you know, me being the guest and everything, but it was a lot of fun, and his daughters were just delightful, and they seemed to really be really into games, and so he put them in bed, and we got some Chinese food, and which was really good too, and then he brought out his painted copy of Star Trek Fleet Captain.
It is a beaut.
Yeah, with all the painted ships and everything, he did a wonderful job on that, and Cody and I had played kind of a partial game of that a few days prior, but this was the first time I had a chance to play the full game. And so that's one of the reviews we want to do for this episode. Cody, you want to talk about that now?
Engage.
All right, so the reviews in this episode are going to be just a lot quicker and just sort of more rapid fire read.
Wrong!
Something like that. So we're going to talk about Star Trek Fleet Captains. This is a new game that came out at Gen Con from WizKids, who apparently acquired the license for Star Trek-y things, right?
For some.
For some, yeah. I know it's very specific on what games certain companies can make, but this is a game that if you've played the Star Trek Expeditions cooperative game, don't think that this game is anything like that, because it's really
mercifully not. It is not.
And this is a game of exploration, and it's a victory point game, but it's really about completing missions. One player plays the Klingons, and the other player plays the glorious Federation of Planets.
United Federation
of Planets. And the game comes with 24 clicks-based, three-dimensional, cool plastic ships. And there's 12 for each side, and they, for the Federation side, I think they've really covered a wide kind of cross section of the different types of ships.
Yeah, I'm a Star Trek nerd, and that would put it lightly. I mean, that was my thing when I was a kid, and I'm still a pretty big Trek nerd. And they have ships going back. I think the oldest ship they have is probably the Enterprise A,
yeah,
the refit Constitution class.
That's the one from the motion picture.
It's the one that because the Enterprise A, it was the one that they got at the end of Star Trek IV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not a nerd.
No, this is great, and it's kind of funny because when I pulled the box out for this game and I started pulling the ships out, Cody was able to just on site with a little plastic ship tell me what class of ship it was.
Yeah, I'm sorry, ladies, I'm taken. But they've got everything from the Enterprise A, the Kirk era stuff, to, you know, like the Enterprise E and Sovereign class, by the way, and the Defiant class, and you know, the all these things in between. So it was pretty nice to see, you know, you could have the USS Reliant from Star Trek II, and it could be rocking next to a Galaxy class starship, and I thought that was kind of neat. You know, they're not trying to tell a specific story; it's just that general Trek feel,
right? And then the game comes with a bunch of cards that represent different characters and different special abilities and things like that. And it's really cool the way you put the decks together at the beginning of the game. You have 10 decks of 10 cards each. And every game you're going to play with 40 cards. So you're going to pick 4 out of those 10 decks. And they might be for, you know, like the Captain Kirk deck and the, you know, the
Starfleet Command deck,
yeah.
Evasive maneuver, stuff like that.
Right, and they'll have different things in them and different characters. And I think we found that almost all of the main Star Trek characters were accounted for in cards. Except
for the greatest captain, Captain Benjamin Sisko. Benjamin Lafayette Sisko.
Cody's such a big DS9 fan that that was a huge oversight on their part. So we're hoping for maybe maybe the DS9 expansion. Maybe there'll be like actual plastic DS9 or something.
That's about the only way they can win me back. A little runabouts, I'd be all right.
Okay. And so you assemble these decks of cards, and then you're going to get, based upon the ships that you've drafted, there's like a quick ship drafting thing, based on size, you'll select mission cards, and there's three different kinds of missions: influence, combat, and science. And you'll take these cards and form a little deck, and then you'll have three missions at any one given time that you're trying to accomplish. And these things might be range anything from performing a sensor scan in a particular area, exploring a certain number of cards or tiles. I should let you know that there's no board in this game. It's actually a series of hexagonal card / tiles that you lay out in a grid, and they start off face down, and as you go over them, you will turn them over and explore them. And they could be anything from empty space to, you know, big nebulas and that kind of stuff. So, you know, you're going to have one of the other neat features of the game is that every ship has a click base and also has a card that comes with it that gives you different options for how you want to allocate your power. You know, one of the cool things in Star Trek was, you know, hearing Captain Kirk saying, you know, Scotty, we got to have more power to the shields. You know, I'm giving it all you can, Captain, you know, and
that's good.
I mean, it's terrible, but but you have the ability in this game to make power shifts, to be able to divert power to certain areas and make your engine stronger or make your shield stronger. And you can do that on every turn with each one of your ships. So it's very cool to be able to sort of, you really feel like you're managing what's going on with your ships. Now, you've played Starfleet Battles before, right?
Yes.
Now, from what I hear, this game is, well, very different from Starfleet Battles, but that there's that management of resources is even more granular in Starfleet Battles.
Yeah.
Right?
Starfleet Battles, they're at the beginning of each turn, there's something called energy allocation.
Uh-huh.
And that's where, you know, depending on how many points of energy your ship is producing, you know, through warp engines or impulse engines or anything like that, batteries. You know, it's like I have 36 points of energy, and then at the beginning of the turn, you have to allocate each point of energy, sometimes each fractional point of energy.
Ugh.
How much am I assigning to the shields, to the weapons, to the sensors, things like that? And it takes a good long time. So this was kind of a quick and dirty. It's pretty much power to the shields, power to the sensors.
Yeah, it's like I need more shields. Look for the big shield number. Click to that setting, and you're good.
And what's nice is that the ships were very themey, like the Reliant is, you know, basically like a scout ship sort of thing. So it always has a high sensor value, even when it gets damaged.
Right.
You know, everything else may be crap on it, but the sensors are still fantastic. So
yeah,
that was a good inclusion.
So you're going to shift those things around and move them around on the board, and, you know, you just have all these different conditions for getting victory points. It could be battling, or it could be just controlling certain areas or exploring certain areas. And so the game just goes back and forth of doing this. And every game is different because you have an encounter deck. Every time you explore a tile, you might have an encounter. These are very themey and very much fit the, you know, kind of the theme of different kinds of things that went on during the Star Trek series and movies.
And since you're building your deck at the beginning, you know, 4 out of 10, you can make some really different decks each
Absolutely.
Time.
So. Yeah, so replayability is real high. The game takes probably, I would say, an hour, hour and a half to play.
Yeah, once you get
know.
The rules.
Yeah, so it's really not a very long game. They say that it's a 2 or 4 player game, so not a 3 player game. So you can have a 1-on-1 battle, or you can have your armies kind of split.
And do teams.
Yeah. So I think it would probably, we haven't played it with teams yet, but I think it would work pretty well with that. You would just, you have to, you know, not broadcast, you know, to your opponents what you're trying to do. So.
Right.
So anyway, that's sort of the idea of Fleet Captain. So, you know, on Game On with Cody and John, we do buy points, try points, and deny points to keep with our buy, try, or deny theme. You know, things that are great about the game, things that are kind of so-so, and things that aren't good. So, Cody, let's go over some buy points for this game.
Okay, well, one of them for me was that it really feels like an episode of Star Trek, because with the different missions you have... I guess, as an aside, I thought at first this was just a combat-only game, kind of like Starfleet Battles with clicks. And
yeah.
It's
well, there's a picture on the box of like the Enterprise
shooting something.
Yeah.
But it's better than that, because it feels like an episode of the show. You know, some of your missions will be combat-related. You have to go blow up the bad guys, or you have to, you know, scan these strange systems, or you have to go rescue these colonists or something. So. And with the replayability, like John mentioned earlier, it's really neat because you feel like from beginning to end, you've been through an episode of Star Trek. You know, there may be some anachronisms in there, but it's a pretty fulfilling experience. So I thought they did a really good job of capturing the Trek feel.
Yeah, definitely. If you're a Star Trek fan and you've enjoyed watching the series and the movies, you know, me, I was a more or less strictly a Star Trek The Next Generation fan. I was very well versed on that. That was kind of the big show when I was in junior high and high school. And so I knew a lot about that. If you like that universe, you're going to get lots of different stories and lots of different themey things that come out of it. And I think that the way that you can build these decks, just flipping through the cards, almost like flipping through baseball cards, like, oh, you know, I got a Geordi LaForge, you know, it's really, really cool to see what they do. And the special abilities in the cards line up pretty nicely with their characters. So they did a real good job of capturing the theme. That's probably the biggest buy point that I could think of. I think the quality of the components is maybe a try point.
Yeah, at best. I mean, the ship models are neat. The clicks bases are so-so, but the card quality, I think, is pretty poor, especially for a retail price of $100.
Yeah,
it's not great, you know.
Artwork on the card, I think, is decent. I mean, it's mostly screen captures from the show, so yeah. You can do that's about the best.
Nothing to write home about either way. It's functional, but yeah. I mean, they all look like Elcars displays, like the Star Trek kind of displays.
What's it called?
Elcars.
Elcars.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that. So you just learned something.
Yeah, cool.
But they all have that kind of Elcars look, so, I mean, take it or leave it, it's functional.
Yeah.
And a try point for me, and this is kind of upgraded for a deny point because I know some people like them,
yeah.
Are the click spaces. I hate click spaces. I just, you know, the reason that I think they never caught on is because you have to keep picking up your miniature in the middle of the action, you know, like if you're playing one of the miniatures combat games,
yeah,
to make the changes. And that just, I don't know, that takes you out of it for a little bit. In this case, I just found it was very unnecessary because you had the cards, you know, if they just had some sort of marker, you could, you know, display what your ship was on.
Yeah.
And the clicks are so small. It's like, oh, what's your ship shield setting at? You'd have to pick up the thing anyway. So it's like, why not just have it on the card?
Just have it on the card and have a marker to say that I'm on this setting. And you could even have it be sort of like the Formula D components where you are setting certain little pegs, mm-hmm, into certain things. You could have sort of a component like that shows what things are set on. Because really all you need to know, all your opponent needs to know about your ship is, have you been hit or not? Because, mm-hmm, when you get hit...
they may want to know like shield settings and stuff.
Which you can tell them, yeah. But, but being able to visually see on the board, hey, they're at yellow alert, which means you've had one damage, mm-hmm, or they're at red alert, which is two damage, then, you know... that's important to be able to see. So maybe you could have a marker or a token to go on that. It just seems like, I mean, I think they were probably, it was probably part of the deal that they had to make a clicks game out
maybe.
Of this. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, because I know some people like them. That's why it's a try point. But the clicks just does nothing to me. You have these beautiful models and they're on these horrid click spaces.
And I have clicks that they were very, very tight. I'm having a real hard time getting them to move. So that wasn't great. My only deny point on the game is the cost. And I got this game kind of as a present to myself for my birthday with some Myriad money that I had. And, but it's $100 for this game. And I think that when you look at the gameplay, it's been a well-designed game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as far as gameplay goes and design, it's quality. But as far as the components and what you're getting, yeah, it's a lot of plastic. That's, you know, and I'm sure that's where all the money is going, is in those nice molded plastic ships. But I think they kind of skimped on a lot of other things.
Yeah, because I don't know if I mentioned this as a try point, but for me, some of the components are bad enough to be deny points. Mm-hmm. Like the card quality, I'm looking at you, because it's just atrocious. It's just not good at all. And the price is a little high, but the biggest deny point for this game, as we mentioned earlier, no Ben Sisko.
That was it. It would have raised
your... You can't have the Defiant without Benjamin Sisko. I'm just saying.
Okay, all right. So that is Star Trek Fleet Captains. I had a really good time playing that with Russ on Friday night. And it was about that time on Friday night that Cody arrived.
Hello.
Where he had been dropped off by Dan and Sarah at Russ's house. And so we hung out with him for a little bit longer and then headed to the hotel to get a little bit of sleep before the big day on Saturday.
All right, so Saturday morning we had to fuel up before we went to Myriad. So we went to what the locals call the Dunks.
The Dunks.
That is the Dunkin' Donuts. We have a few here in Indiana, but they have more probably in a 5-mile radius than we do in the Indy metro area.
It's remarkable. There's at least, I think, three between Myriad and the one that we went to,
it's
which
pretty
is
ridiculous.
2 miles away. So.
Yeah. So we went to the Dunks, and my donut ordering etiquette is completely off because I'm up there, and you know, everyone in New England, they talk real fast and they're just go, right? You know, and I'm just this bumpkin from the Midwest, and like, I'd like a chocolate glazed donut, and they're like, how many you want? I'm like, two? I don't know. You know.
Don't yell at me.
It's very stressful, but we got our Dunks on, and
we really did feel like fish out of water, like we were in a different pond, you know?
I know, right?
Our Midwestern sensibilities were challenged.
Yeah. So, to say the least. So, we went to Myriad right around 7:45, 8 in the morning to get things started. And the first nice, somewhat of a surprise, was that we saw our good friend Eric Summerer, co-host of the Dice Tower.
And we were expecting him.
We were expecting him.
He had joined our team for
But still, life. Very good to see him.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, very good.
And we saw, this was a surprise, Scott Nicholson.
Yeah, he was standing out there talking to Eric.
As featured on Game On with Cody and John.
That's right. We had mentioned that to him during our interview that was going on, but we weren't sure if he was going to make it. Actually, didn't think he was going to make it at all. So, yeah. Very cool to see him and meet him in person for the first time.
Yeah, it was real good to meet him. And we had some other folks. We had Jeremy, the D6G Sherpa. He was there, raring to go. So we had our first group. We decided to break in one of the now traditional Extra Life games, and that is Hex Hex XL.
That's right.
The game of flinging hexes and grabbing sticks, and you, no battle scars this year. I only played once, so I didn't get wounded.
No, there was a little bit less violence this year, I think.
Yeah.
Friendlier games. Yeah. And I think Scott even recorded a little video of us playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
One of his little in-play reviews that he does. So yes. That was fun.
So if you check out his, it's either on his website or his Twitter or both, you can kind of see that. And I might retweet that as this
episode
releases.
Yeah, it was on BGG too. I think he posted
it. Yeah, that's true. So that was kind of nice. Nice way to start it off. And then as more people showed up, we started to split off into different groups. And Mr. Craig Gallant of the D6G arrived, and he couldn't stay too long because he had a wedding that day. Not his wedding, but wedding he was attending. So regrettably, we did not get to see him much at all.
No.
But he did stay long enough to give us the grand, using his terrain, the kind of grand introductory tour of Dystopian Wars.
Yeah.
And I've heard him talk about his terrain on the podcast, and I've seen pictures, but the real deal is mighty impressive.
I mean, man. Just crazy, crazy cool stuff.
Phenomenal stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Makes you want to play.
Yeah. And so we set up this huge area. We did a team game. We met up with friend of the show. I will elevate him to friend of the show.
He is friend of the show.
Chuck Robinson.
Yes.
the owner of the greatest New England accent in the world.
Indeed. And Chuck had shown up last year to play some games with us for Extra Life. And this year came for the full thing.
That's right.
The whole time. And he signed up as a team member for Gamesalute.com, raised some money, and he was all in for the whole day. So we spent a lot of time with Chuck and had a great time. So
yeah, Chuck's a beast. I hope he can make it out here sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But we were teammates representing the Kingdom of Britannia, and John and Jeremy were representing the Dirty Prussians.
The awesome Prussians.
Dirty Prussians. So we didn't play a full game, but we played enough of an introductory game to get the gist of the rules, because John and I basically, you know, the Dystopian Wars rule book, well written is not a word I would use to describe it. It is no. It's not great.
Yeah.
So we kind of needed just to play a game to kind of have just a frame of reference, and so we played a few turns on this beautiful map, and I think I got enough to see what the game was about and everything.
Yep, and now that we've played it and we've kind of got it down. Let's do another review.
Let's go.
So, listeners of the show,
unite.
That would be you.
Have nothing to lose but your chains.
You know, we have taken you on many a journey here on Game On with Cody and John, and our wanderings and meanderings of gaming. And one of those is when we got into miniatures wargaming back a couple years ago with War Machine. And it's taken
We're still playing.
But it's taken a while for, and we did some 40K too. I think we did a review of one play of it. That's right. But we've been, you know, trying to find what's that next thing going to be that'll take us on the next step of our journey in miniatures wargaming, because we've still got our toes in the water. And speaking of water, Dystopian Wars is sort of the one that we decided to go with, a naval combat game set in sort of a steampunk alternate history. And I guess it's sort of set in the 1800s, but
yeah,
things like the South won the Civil War. And the story behind it loosely is that there's this this guy down in that's a sort of a baron or some sort of leader who finds this stockpile of technology down in Antarctica and starts to sort of sell and mete out this technology to all these different nations and factions, and craziness ensues and wars start up and all that kind of stuff. Probably not telling the story right, but that's sort of the idea of it. You have these futuristic-y sort of ships and airplanes that are all flying around. Like any good miniatures game, there's multiple factions involved. In this case, you have the awesome Prussians,
mm-hmm.
the Kingdom of Britannia.
God save the Queen.
You have the Empire of the Blazing Sun.
Totally not Japan.
No, it's, well, it's supposed to be sort of like the all of the Asian nations that have sort of come together.
Right. So,
and then you also have the Federated States of America.
FSA. All the way.
Yeah. And then you have the new faction that just came out called the Covenant of Antarctica. And so, you know, just like any miniatures game, you can choose your starter box or your fleet for that and can paint them all up. These models are resin models, so they're plastic, but it's not quite the plastic of like a 40K model or even the new War Machine models. It's a little different. I don't know much about plastic, but...
Yeah, and because they're that resin, they're actually, I believe they're computer, at least they're computer aided in the sculpting of it.
Yeah.
So some of these models are some of the most detailed models I've ever seen, because they can get down to where human hands can never sculpt.
Yeah, little ladders on the sides of ships.
Yeah. That,
you know, just crazy kind of stuff. The detail is amazing.
Yeah, so. The models are very impressive.
So a starter box of this is going to come with whatever faction you get is going to start come with a battleship, which is your big ship there. Thing is probably about 3-4 inches long.
Maybe? Yeah, I'd say so.
And then you have three cruisers, which are a little bit smaller. And then you have 9 frigates, which are the little sort of tiny ships. You also get 2 bombers, which are airplanes that are going to be on stands, real big airplanes. And then you have these little counters that have tiny airplanes on mm-hmm. them, and that those represent squadrons or wings of little fighters or bombers. So, you know, in the game, it's just like any other miniatures war game. You're going to deploy your troops and take turns. There's a integrated turn system in this game, which is different from something like 40K or War Machine. You know, in War Machine, if it's your turn, you allocate your focus and you move all your guys and do all of your attacking mm-hmm. and everything, and then it's the other player's turn. In this case, what you're going to do is you'll have different squadrons and different units, and you'll activate one of those units, move and attack and do what you're going to do, and then your opponent gets to move one. And in this way, it's sort of like... kind of like HeroScape in that respect, in that, you know, you're moving one unit at a time. And I like that quality of the game quite a bit, because I just sort of feel like there's less downtime.
Yeah.
You know, you move one thing and then...
And it feels more tactical. You know, you see a ship go here, it's like, well, do I chase him or do I start, you know, pushing my own strategy? So I really like integrated turn system in games.
Yeah. You don't have to watch it sort of play out and say, well, I made a mistake and now I'm screwed for the right. whole, you know, rest of this turn. And so the movement, you know, the movement's very simple. It's just there are cards that come with each kind of ship that'll tell you the number of inches you can move. It's, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A tape measure game.
There you so go.
You use a tape measure to measure these things. There's also some turning templates where you can turn your ship because, you know, depending on the size of the ship will determine the arc that it can turn. And then each of your ships is going to have a variety of different weapons on it. There are primary weapons, usually big turret guns. There are weapons on the port and starboard broadsides that can shoot things. Some ships will have guns in the back. And then you also have possibly the ability of doing torpedoes and things like that. And so, you know, the dice system, I really like the way the dice system works, because it's based upon successes, not upon based upon rolling like to beat a particular...
Mm, a target number.
A target number, yeah. So in the game, basically anything that's a 4+ is a success.
On a D6.
On a D6, yeah. 4+ is a success. 1, 2, 3 is a miss. 6 is going to count as 2 successes, and then you get to roll another die. So it's got kind of that Savage World sort
exploding dice
mm-hmm. mechanic.
I love it.
Which is pretty fun. You know, and that's especially good when you have a small ship. It gives you the... if you have a small ship or something with not very much power to it, you always have an incentive to try it, you know. go ahead and try an attack, because you might roll that six and you might roll multiple sixes. And we even saw it in the demo that we did, that some things kind of stacked on top of one another. And the ships have the ability to link fire together, so you can add additional dice instead of having to roll three or four dice, then, three dice per ship. You could roll five dice for both of them. And, cause the idea is that it hits on a 4+, but you have to get a certain number of successes. And that's measured against the defensive value of the ship. And then that's going to determine what kind of damage that you do to the ship. There's also rules for things called assault points. These are rules for if you want to actually send, like jetpack troops from your ship to another ship to board the ship.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, and so there's rules for that as to how those interactions happen. So it can be very cinematic, I think, in the way the game plays out, where you have not only... And that's very abstracted. It's not like there's actual little guys, models. You'd sort of think of that abstractly in your head, but you can create some pretty fun situations there. Like any other miniatures game, you buy the starter box. I think it's $55 retail for the starter box. And I think you get a pretty good quality amount of stuff for that, for a miniatures game. And then you can, of course, buy lots more stuff. There are big carriers that... The one for the Prussians looks like a giant Hindenburg-style airship with a big runway ramp on, like an aircraft carrier sitting on top of it, And so that's very cool. And there's even land troops in this game, too. We've only played the sea game, but there's also land troops, tanks, and other troops and things like that. So you can play out a full mega-scale battle with this guy.
And you'll need a copy of the rule book as well. It does not come with the box.
That's right. You need the rule book and your starter box and a ton of D6s. And also the little tiny flyers. I didn't really talk too much about those, but they have different kinds of movement that they can do, and you can assign different kinds of rules to them. They can drop bombs, they can do torpedoes, and you can sort of set your army up in a particular way with particular abilities. And so you have to actually track the fuel on those ships as they're flying around, so you might need some counters, or I've seen some... I think Jeremy had a real clever thing with these little stands, the
Litco bases.
Little Litco bases that had a setting, like a little dial on it for the fuel. So that's kind of just a basic overview of how the game works. There's, like any other miniatures game, there's a lot of specific little granular rules as to how things work. And a lot of those are on the cards, but a lot of them are also going to be just in the rule book there. So if you're familiar with miniatures games at all, you'll know that there's that skin level, of rules of here's how you roll dice. But then there's a lot of depth to, the detail that you can get into as you get involved in the game. So that's Dystopian Wars, and let's give some buy, try, and deny points for this one. Cody, buy points?
One buy point of this game is that it just has a very fun feel to it, like with the exploding dice, and you have the boarding parties, and the fact that you can come up with a lot of different scenarios for it. It just has a lot of fun with it. It has like cool critical charts and things like that.
Oh yeah, I didn't even mention that. Yeah, critical charts, cool.
It just has a lot of fun, and some of it is even like a little tongue in cheek, and it's just... it just comes off as a very, I don't want to say light. It's not that at all, but it's not afraid to have fun. It's not a real stiff game. It's just, some of the rules are a little loose in some points, but it seems to have fun in mind first. And so just the little demo we played, it was a very gratifying, very fun experience.
Yeah. And we even did some things in our demo that we maybe wouldn't have ordinarily done, but we just wanted to see how the rules played out. Like, well, let's let my bombers go and do this, or my fighters go and do this, and see how the dice roll out. One of the things I like about the game that's different from War Machine is that in War Machine, you're only ever going to be rolling a maximum of like four dice at once,
Right.
And with this game, depending on how you, get your ships lined up and what kind of weapons you're using, you could be rolling literally like 20 dice at a time. And I think that's kind of fun, And I have one of those little bricks of Chessex dice, little 36 count small ones, and I never get really a chance to use those. But man, that's just a lot of fun, just to roll a bunch of dice, count up all your fours, fives, and sixes, and go from there. So that's one fun aspect to it for me. One other buy point that we've already sort of mentioned it is that the model quality is just superb in this game, and I found that they were very, very easy to paint. a lot easier than War Machine models, in my opinion.
I'd agree.
I did a lot, also because it's I have a Prussian fleet, so a lot of mine was metal, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so I could do just a lot of just did a black primer and just did a lot of dry brushing with some cold steel and some gray, and that just goes on really easily. And something about that resin, it just makes the details very easy to paint for me. So that was a real buy point for me. So try points.
I don't know whether this is a try or deny point for me, so I'm going to kind of lump them both together.
Okay.
I would say if this is your first miniatures game, I wouldn't go with this game because I think the rules and the way they're written and the rule book itself are, it's just not written that well. And the rules are still a little loose and fiddly for me. It, like I said, it's a fun game, but it kind of pays for it a little bit too. Like, you know, if you read the rules to War Machine versus the rules to this, it's like night and day. I mean, it's just not presented really well. So I would just throw that caution out there. I don't want to dissuade anyone from playing because it is a fun game. And if you like the idea and the theme of it, then you should go for it. But just be very cautious that you might want to find a group that is playing it already, or be prepared to really invest some time in really getting into it and seeing if it's something you want to do. Because, like I said, the rules are just not written real well.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And that's maybe true for most miniatures games, but with this one especially, find someone that you know in your game group or at your local game store that is playing this game or knows how to play it. Getting a demo from that person will be a lot easier than trying to pick through the rule book. And Cody and I taught ourselves how to play War Machine from the rule book,
mm-hmm.
and it was a challenge to do that. Yeah. But we were able to do it because the rules are pretty well indexed and table of contents and all that kind of stuff. This book, I did not find that to be the case, and so I've found myself very confused trying to figure out what they were talking about. Now, once Jeremy and Craig were explaining how things went, then it just sort of put all the pieces together in my mind, and now when I go back to the rule book, it makes more sense. But yeah, it was kind of hairy to get through, and that was kind of a try/deny point for me. But I don't know. I might disagree with you there that I don't think it's a bad one to start off with, provided that you have someone that can teach you the rules to it.
Mm-hmm. I think my only other try points would be, it may be obvious, but it is a miniatures game. Know what you're getting into.
Right.
You'll have to get them, assemble them, paint them, or get someone else to assemble and paint them for you. And that, you know, if you and your group want to play bigger things or try new things, it's, you'll have to buy the pack. I mean, it seems like dumb to even bring it up, but I just want to make sure everyone knows that.
Right.
And then the theme is a the theme's a deny point for me, but I'll throw it out as a try point because I hate steampunk. I do not care for steampunk at all. I hope it dies soon.
Ooh.
But it's enough to where the game's fun enough to where I'll do that.
You're not going to get one of those leather top hats at Gen Con, the gas mask, the little eyepiece thing.
I don't even get me started. Like, the people just wear a t-shirt and a jeans is like, oh, I've got a monocle with a gear on it. I'm like, oh, just stop. Sorry, you hit a nerve.
I guess so.
Sorry, but steampunk.
You know what? I hate guys that wear gold bards costumes around Gen Con.
No,
it just drives me
crazy. We all can't be awesome.
But
the steampunk theme may or may not be for you, but this game does execute it well. I mean, it has a lot of good fiction. It has a lot of good setting fluff. They really go the whole nine yards on it. So if it's not your thing, be a little more wary. But if you really like steampunk, then it might persuade you to get this game even more.
All right. Well, and overall, I really like the game as well, and exactly
a lot
what Cody said. So that is Dystopian Wars. Okay, let's get back into the rundown.
All right, so going back to the rundown, one of the next games I played after that was, it was kind of after lunch, is that Scott Nicholson got a few guys together, and we played the role-playing game Fiasco. And Fiasco is one I wanted to try. I tried to get in a demo at Gen Con. I couldn't get it in the schedule. And he volunteered to run it, so me and a few others decided to get in there and do it. And it was very interesting. It's an indie RPG.
You know who's a big fan of Fiasco?
Who?
Will Wheaton.
Oh, well. Okay.
I thought you'd like that.
Well, I figured everyone had run out and bought it then, because it came from the lips of Will Wheaton.
Exactly.
But anyway.
Sorry, I derailed you there.
So Fiasco is a very kind of indie RPG. It's the setting is more like, it's kind of like a Coen Brothers movie where it's like things go wrong and hilarious consequences and all that. But it can be adapted to other settings, as I'll get into in a minute. And the idea is it's a GM-less system. It's all player-run, and it's very much about characters and their relationships, and it's very role-playing heavy. You know, if you're looking for a tactical RPG, do not play Fiasco. Scott ran and facilitated. He did a great job of it. And our setting was, we did kind of a fantasy setting, and we did one where we were a band of adventurers, and we had just slain the dragon and taken all the loot, and we were leaving the lair, and that's where the story started. Now, I believe they have a demo on, I don't even know who makes the game at the top of my head.
Oh, I don't either.
I don't either. Okay.
Fiasco LLC.
That's right. But you can check out some of the basic rules online. It's interesting because it's all about, you know, you can really take the ball and run with your character, or you can let other people do it. But the whole thing is you end up getting this like really nice setting that you create and the story, and you can set, you know, scenes in the past or in the present or in the future, but it's all about getting these relationships and kind of I don't know, like just finding, you know, like finding kind of usually hilarious consequences that come out of it. I know it sounds like a very nebulous kind of mini review there, but it was good, and if your group is a storytelling kind of like group or into those more indie RPGs, Fiasco is a great choice because the rules are easy to grasp, and if you have the right kind of people, you know, the really kind of more outspoken people, it can be a really fun experience. So we played that for about an hour or two, and I'm glad he taught us. It was something I was looking forward to trying. I'm glad I did.
Cool. And, you know, so we had, after Dystopian Orbs, we kind of branched off into our own little genres there. So Cody did the RPG there. And I had an opportunity to play a Euro game that I hadn't been able to play a full game of yet. And that is Martin Wallace's Steam. Not Age of Steam. So you Age of Steam fans out there, it's not Age of Steam.
Steam rails to riches.
Yeah, and there's a big debate over which one's better. But, you know, anyway, we played Steam. And so I played with Chuck and with Eric Summer. And had a great time, and I'm glad that I got to finally play a full game of this one. It really is a lot of fun. You know, if you like train and economic games, you know, I think many would say who are familiar with this game or this series of games to try Age of Steam first. I really don't. I have no opinion in that matter. Steam, though, a solid game, and Eric pretty much wiped the floor with.
I saw that scoreboard as I was walking by.
Yeah, he did a great job. I didn't. I was just trying to still feel out the rules and figure it out. So I, you know, it's kind of a. I wouldn't say it's a depressing game, but Martin Wallace has this tendency to really latch onto the idea of poverty, and you don't have enough of what you need, and so, you know, you start the game off with no money at all. You have to go immediately into the hole to be able to build anything, and so you're constantly looking at this income track. And I, you know, I think I started the first four or five turns in the negative before I finally was able to get an engine rolling for some money. But great components, a lot of fun with that one. So glad I got a chance to play that guy. After that, I joined Cody and our buddy Jay and Scott Nicholson to play Dice Town.
Yeehaw!
Which, wow, boy, I mean, I own that game and I hadn't played it in a long time. So this was, I think, Scott's first play of that game.
Yes.
And I had a great time with that. I don't remember who won, but...
Either you or Scott did, I think.
Yeah, something like that. But,
yeah.
But it was still a great time.
It was fun.
And it always been, you know, very fun playing games with Scott because... It's probably like playing games with us, you know, being podcasters, that as soon as the game's over with, there's the post-game analysis, you know?
Right.
And so we got kind of like a little mini review from Scott about the things that he liked about it. And so that was pretty cool. I've heard the expansion for that game is real good. We'll have to check that out sometime.
The neat thing about the expansion, I know nothing about the gameplay of it, is that if you have the two boxes next to each other, the art extends, like the expansion box extends the art from the base game's spine into...
Ooh.
That's clever. Not every game company thinks of that.
Yeah.
And even though I usually just throw my expansion box away, you know.
Remember that game Jamaica? Remember playing that
one? Yes.
All the cards in that game, if you laid them all out, they form one big art piece. So
clever.
Neat.
It's the little things.
All right. What'd you play next?
Next, I got a game of War Machine in with Russ. And it was nice because, like John said earlier, we taught ourselves War Machine here. And we kind of wanted just to make sure, at least I wanted to make sure, because I'm anal like that we were getting the rules right. You know, and Russ has played
Cody wanted to make sure that John didn't screw up when he taught the rules.
No. John doesn't really play War Machine with us anymore anyway. So,
aww.
Just saying. So anyway, I played with Russ, and it just,
pull that skeleton out of the closet. Jeez, it's hard to find time.
I've got my army.
Okay.
And so I played with him, and he asked, he's like, hey, in Russ Wakeland fashion, he's like, hey, can I bring up my battle engine? You know, hey, can we try this one with the battle engine? You know, kind of like, oh, gee, shucks, you know. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I kind of wanted to play against it. I'd seen the things. And the battle engines for the uninitiated are, so you have pretty much the biggest models in Standard War Machine are the heavy war jacks. They're about 3 inches high or something. You know, there's big hulking things. Well, the battle engines are, take that and times 4 or 5. I mean, they're these just massive. Kador has a big gun carriage led by 2 armor-clad horses. The Signar one looks kind of like an alien walker. The Menoth one looks like a church organ.
It's like a giant church organ, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. But there's gigantic units that have special rules and qualities. And they still have point costs, so we were able to have a balanced fight. And so Russ and I played, and it was nice to see that we've got about like 90% of the rules right. We just had a few fiddly things. It was nice to learn from him.
Good.
And we played probably one of my favorite games of War Machine I've ever played. You know, it really reinforces that when we play that, we have to play scenario. Like, we cannot just do...
Kill everybody.
Yeah, huh? It's just boring. I mean, we had a scenario, and everything was based around that. It was great. And I took down his battle engine with my Warcaster.
Nice.
That was nice.
And Butch, right? We brought Butch out.
The Butcher. And I eked out a very narrow victory. It was going back and forth there. I wasn't sure who was going to win. But
oh, you won.
I won, yeah.
Oh, well done.
Barely. it came down the last turn. It was a great game, and it really kind of rekindled that excitement for it, because it had kind of flagged lately. We hadn't played a lot, and I wasn't sure if we were getting the rules right, and it was just... I don't know. I wasn't contemplating getting out of it, but I just wasn't excited to play it.
Yeah.
And now I've kind of reinvigorated that excitement. I'm ready to get back at it. And I think I'm going to get the Kador battle engine. I think really? I'm going to pick that up, yeah. Because it's a cool-looking model. And the fact that, I was worried it might be overbalanced, or unbalanced, I should say. But it's pretty well balanced with everything else, you know. It's like he fielded that battle engine, but he didn't field much else, where I didn't have a battle engine and I had a lot of guys, so... it all worked out. So War Machine was a lot of fun, and I'm ready to get back at it.
Outstanding.
Oh, and one note on War Machine. Anyone who's been listening to our show, or maybe listened back to that War Machine episode, and is thinking about getting back in or giving it a try, Privateer Press now has the 2-player battle box.
Oh, yeah.
So if you got you and a buddy, it's a really good deal for the models. I feel like they're a sponsor, but...
No, but it's just a good thing, yeah.
Yeah. And it's... is it... Kador and Menoth, or Signar and Menoth?
Kador and Menoth, and you get in that box, which I think is $90, $100, something like that.
Oh, I think it's less than that.
Okay. Was it 80,
I think it's like 80 bucks.
80, yeah. 90 bucks, something like that. You get the equivalent of both starter boxes for Kador and for Menoth, plus an extra unit of, I think it's like Cinerators for Menoth. I'm not sure what it is for Kador, but so it's more than getting 2 battle boxes, and it's all the new plastics, so they really go into the plastic models instead of the metal ones. But yeah, that's a really good deal.
Yeah, had I to do over again, or if I ever start a second army, I might go Menoth. I just like the look of them.
They do look pretty cool.
So that was my War Machine experience, and I still owe Chuck. I still owe you a game. I was just going to play Russ as like a side game while. You guys were finishing up your game of Steam, I think, or I don't know. He was playing something else.
Yeah, we Puzzle Strike.
Puzzle Strike, yes. Yeah. Good game, Puzzle Strike. Yeah. And so check out your game. So come out to Indy and we'll play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so while Cody was playing War Machine right next to the table right next to him, we played a game of Puzzle Strike. I think it was and that was a lot of fun. I think it was the first time that Chuck and Jay had played that game, and I don't think I did a very good job of explaining the rules, because it's a really tricky one to explain. They had all played Dominion and games like that, so the deck building part of it made sense, but just trying to figure out the difference between having your gem pile and then having your active pile of stuff that you're doing and your discard pile. Apparently there's been an expansion or an extension of something that's been released that includes player mats. I'm not sure if it's been released yet or if it's upcoming, but it includes player mats.
It's like an upgrade pack, isn't it?
Upgrade pack, that's it, yeah. And that it has actual mats where it shows where your gem pile is, so you can sort of keep things organized and separated out in front of you. But we really had a good game of that, and so that was a lot of fun. And after I finished that game, I kind of wandered over to a table where they were playing the game Blood Bowl Team Manager. It's the new card game hotness from Fantasy Flight Games. This one was released at Gen Con, and I never had a chance to play it. Really, to be honest, I wasn't that interested in it. I've never really played Blood Bowl before. The Warhammer Fantasy thing, I just really didn't care that much for, or didn't think one way or the other about it. So I didn't really rush to check that one out, but everybody had said it was pretty good. And so I sat down and podcaster Jeffrey Norman Burbeau.
A player,
a teacher.
An instructor.
taught us how to play this game. And I got to tell you, that's a good game. And let's talk about that one some more.
Let's do it.
All right, so like I said, I don't know much about Blood Bowl. Mm-hmm. I know that it's a game that came out. It's like a miniatures board game.
Yeah.
That it's all of the different factions and races from Warhammer Fantasy, but they're playing football.
American football,
and it's this sort of weird, they're killing each other, they're bloodying each other and beating each other up and all that kind of stuff. And there's lots of cheating going on. It's just supposed to be this weird free for all of a game. I think they've even made a video game out of it recently. Mm-hmm. And so this game is not so much about playing Blood Bowl. It's Blood Bowl the card game, but it's Blood Bowl Team Manager. And what you're doing here is you're playing the manager of one of these teams, and you're playing out the games in a kind of an abstract fashion, And to me, this game reminds me a little bit of Battle Line, mm-hmm. if you've ever played that game. And so the way it's going to work is that you can play 2, 3, or 4 players, and each player is going to take on a particular faction. I think both times that I played at Extra Life, I played the dwarfs. Mm-hmm. But there's the dwarfs, the humans, there's the chaos, I think there's orcs, there's wood elves or something like that. And so there's lots of different things you can choose from. And your deck of cards is sort of your players. And the game has a slight deck building aspect to it, but it's really more about just playing cards.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a deck building.
Not overall, yeah. There's an aspect to it at the very end there. And so the idea is that you're going to be playing out several rounds in which you're contesting these cards. They're like called highlight cards or the highlight reel. And so these cards are going to be turned over in the middle of the table, and they'll have little kind of funny headlines on them, for like you're reading the headlines of a particular game's stats or something like that. And on the card, it'll tell you what kind of rewards that you can get. The overall goal of the game is that you're going to try to end up with the most fans. And you're going to get fans by winning these cards. There's lots of other ways you can get fans as well in the game. And whoever ends up with the most of those at the end ends up being the winner. It comes with these really cool, typical, now what's becoming typical, Fantasy Flight dials. Mm-hmm. Very similar to like the threat dials that are in the Lord of the Rings living card game. So these cards will go out, and then on each card, I think there's 4 of them that are played, there'll be a token that represents the football. And what you're trying to do is you'll go around the table, and each player will play a card that represents one of the players on their team. It could be a dwarf blitzer or a human thrower or something like that. And each of those cards, those players players being players of the football team,
right.
Have abilities that they can do. They can try to tackle, or they can take the ball, or they can do what's called sprinting, which will allow you to pull more players out of your deck. And so the idea being that you're going to play cards until all of your cards are gone. Everyone starts off with 6 cards, and then you're going to look at the different matchups. Only 2 players can be on a particular card, like they're battling each other. And then you're going to compare the strength of either side. Now, by tackling other players during the middle of the game, you can reduce their strength. You can even kind of knock them out of the game. There's even players that can do cheating, and cheating is the only thing that's mandatory. Like, if you play a tackle card for a guy, you don't have to tackle if you don't want to. But if you play a card with a cheating symbol on it, you have to cheat.
Well, like Bill Belichick and the Patriots, right?
Exactly like that. And, well, we were in New Hampshire, so. So we they have these little cool skull cheating tokens, and those tokens might have things on them like additional strength values. I think it's called star power, actually, is the stat. It might have additional stars on it that'll help to increase your strength. It could have fans on it that you just immediately get because the fans saw that you were cheating. Or it could have a whistle on it, which basically means that the referees catch you cheating, and once everything is resolved, that player gets booted and isn't included in the final tally. So after all the cards are played, you compare each of these matchups, and you'll get hand out prizes based upon who wins those. And those prizes could be fans. They could be what are called staff upgrades, which are cards that will be special things. Like, you know, you could have a special trainer, or you could have an assistant defensive coordinator or something like that.
You could force Jim Caldwell into someone.
Aw. Too soon.
Sorry.
And, you know, so those things can give you bonuses during the game. You can also have team upgrades, which will be special cards that will kind of boost your players and might give you extra fans or extra things at the end of the game. You also might get the opportunity to draft new players. And if you do that, then there's a whole deck of these star players that you can draft that you can put into your deck that you can then, you know, recruit into your team that the next hand that you draw, and then use them the next time. These are guys with boosted abilities and cool stuff like that. So you're going to play through five of these rounds where you're doing these matchups. And then at the end of that, you'll calculate up based upon all the cards that you have and things that give you bonuses at the end of the game. You'll add all those things up, and whoever has the most fans win. This game has the coolest tiebreaker I've ever seen in a game.
Yes, I would agree.
if the number of fans is tied, then you're going to look at the number of cards and abilities that you have, and whoever has the most of those is considered to have the most well-developed team, and they win. Okay, so that's just a normal mm-hmm. tiebreaker. But if it's still tied, then the idea is that all of the fans and like the players' unions and everything, and the referees' union, they start to suspect that there's something going on here, that something fishy's going on, and they basically boot both of the teams out of the league. And then the number three player, the player with the next highest score, he becomes the champion.
I like that.
So
quite a bit.
I think that's quite good. And then I guess the idea is that if all players are tied, then the fans revolt and no one wins. So the game is loaded with theme, really great artwork in the Warhammer Fantasy style, and it was really probably one of the highlights for me of Extra Life was playing. I played it two full games of it, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was way better than I thought it would be. So, Cody, you didn't play this at Extra Life, but you have played this before,
yes.
Right? All right. So, what was your opinion of Blood Bowl Team Manager? Give us some buy, try, and deny points.
Buy points. It's produced real well, as you'd expect from a Fantasy Flight game, and the fact that it uses deck building but is not a deck building game. You know, is it a deck building 2.0 game? Yeah, maybe. You know, I thought that was well done. The theme comes across pretty well. I mean, they execute that well. So those would be my buy points.
Okay. As I was kind of gushing about it, I really love the gameplay of it. I love the back and forth of things. As I didn't mention, when you do things like tackling, there are two dice that the game comes with that you roll to determine whether the tackling happens. So there's a little random element there. I like the random element of the cheating, you mm-hmm. know, that those things can kind of pile up. And, you know, when you can look at a matchup and say, oh, I've got seven and you've got three. But then, you know, once you start turning over those cheating tokens, the tide can kind of turn. And I think little random elements like that make it light and fun. Card quality is great. Artwork is great. You know, it's a Silver Line game, so I think the price point is $30 or $35.
That's a good price point for it.
Yeah, so because you get a lot of, you know, pretty decent stuff with it. Try points?
Here's my issue with the game.
Here we go.
For me, and I'll preface it with that, for me, I think I just want to play Blood Bowl, or I kind of wish Fantasy Flight or Games Workshop or someone would just package Blood Bowl as a board game. Maybe a board game with miniatures.
Well, that's how it was packaged originally.
Okay, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I guess I want like a modern version of just Blood Bowl that I can buy a box and I'm good to go. Because yeah. I like the idea, you know, of, oh, it's kind of like football, but you have orcs and dwarves and they're attacking each other. And, you know, I think that's a cool idea. It's kind of like this. The theme was abstracted well and all that, but it's like, I don't really care about managing the team. I want to play the games, and I want to play the games more so than just playing Battle Line. I really want to, you know, call plays and attack guys. And so, and there's no fault of the game because it's, you know, it's very clearly Team Manager. It says it in big bold print on the box. But I guess for me, I would get more out of it if it were just a straight up Blood Bowl experience. And I don't know, you know, there's really not a modern way to do that.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone though in people that want Blood Bowl reprinted. You know, I would hope that maybe somewhere in the deep dark caverns of Games Workshop that they might be working on something, a Space Hulk or Dreadfleet kind of a reprint of that.
Oh, yeah.
That would be really cool. I think that would sell really well.
I'd buy that yesterday.
Yeah. So it's not so much a problem with this specific game. Yeah. It wasn't the experience.
It just make sure you know what you're getting into. It's like you see, you know, a bunch of football players on the front, but just realize that, you know, it's more of a general manager sort of a thing versus, you know, you're getting down there and you're calling plays and you're playing an actual game of Blood Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. And that may be what I kind of liked about it was the fact that it was abstracted like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it felt like you were like you had the headset on, you know, like you were a manager. It wasn't like you were actually, you know, getting in there for the plays. So I like that part of it. Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, try and or deny points would be if you don't like the idea of Blood Bowl or Warhammer or that whole realm, this is not going to be your game. I mean, if you don't like randomness in your game, this is definitely not going to be your game because the dice rolling and the cheating and all that kind of stuff, it's just very raucous and light and random, and that's part of the fun of it. So, got anything else on this?
I think it's a solid game. It's not one I may play it a few more times, but I didn't love or hate it. It was fine.
It was okay.
You know, I played a few more times, but
it was good enough for me that I picked up a copy of it at Extra Life and brought it home. So
there you go.
I really enjoyed that with this one a lot.
It's been getting a lot of good press.
Yeah. That's Blood Bowl Team Manager.
All right, so after that, it was time for a dinner break. The day was just clipping along.
Yeah, it was.
We could go along at a very good pace. We came back and split into several different groups. One group played Merchant of Venus with Eric Summer, and boy, that game's been getting a lot of pub lately, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, we had, if you haven't heard, Merchant of Venus is kind of a long-suffering grail game. It's an old kind of pick-up-and-deliver game set in space that a lot of people, you know, it's long out of print.
Avalon Hill from the 80s, yeah.
Eric Summer loves it. It's his favorite game of all time. I wish I would have played with him because I really wanted to play the game, but the game I ended up playing I wanted to try as well. But the big deal is that Stronghold Games, our good friends over there, they announced that they are reprinting it. And they've had a pretty good track record so far, so everyone's very excited.
Like, hooray.
A few hours later, Fantasy Flight Games announces, no, we're reprinting it.
Yeah.
And
not only did they just say, no, we're reprinting it, they put on their website, like, oh, they've got artwork, and
ready to move on.
They've been working on it for a while.
So there's probably going to be some sort of legal battle. That, you know, it's like the Stronghold Games has the designer's blessing, which means a little more to me, but Fantasy Flight has the Avalon Hill / Hasbro's blessing, and I don't know if they've got their lawyers too, but you know that could end up being kind of a messy legal thing, and I don't know. And knowing nothing else about it, I kind of hope Stronghold comes out on top. But
I think they should play a game of Ink and Gold.
Yeah,
and whoever the winner is,
they should play a game of Tumbling Dice.
Oh, there you go, Tumbling Dice.
Winner gets rights.
See, Cody and John, we can. We can heal the world.
You
we
might say
arbitrate any disagreement.
That's right. So you had Merchant of Venus going on. I still want to play it. It looked cool. You had John was playing Lords of Vegas with some folks.
Lords of Vegas. Got to say it real quick. We've talked tons about Lords of Vegas, and this was my number 11 game on the top 11 last episode.
Pretty low.
Number 3 for Cody.
Yes, sir.
And played this with Chuck and with Adam and with Tim, who Tim was the guy that I played Lords of Vegas with the very first time at Extra Life the previous year.
Yes, sir.
And he showed up to play games, and I was like, oh, we're playing Lords of Vegas again. He's like, oh, okay, I'll play that. So
good trooper.
He's a good trooper. Yeah, it was good to see him again. And we had a blast.
Oh,
this
I could hear
was
you.
The most fun we had, you know, playing any game at Extra Life. And we had the stand-up die rolls, and we had great wheeling and dealing going on. Just had the perfect mix of people that wanted to do deals and taking some big risks. And it was a ton of fun. So I think I ended up winning, which was which was surprising.
You don't win games.
That's not my thing. So yeah, played a great game of Lords of Vegas.
All right, and while all that was going on, the game I got in on, I played with Brian Ahern and his son Spencer, and good folks, and they were teaching a game of Space Empires 4X, and it is this What, I know. Ooh, indeed. And it's this new game from GMT Games. It's basically just a 4X sci-fi game. I know.
Yeah. I loved all the detailed miniatures that it came with. Yeah. And
by detailed miniatures, you mean the bajillion counters. It was basically a big hex encounter game.
GMT for the win.
That's right. I like hex encounters, so I was fine. Uh-huh. I just got done clipping my set of Space Empires. So you might see how I like the game. It was a lot of fun. It was basically kind of a smaller version of Twilight Imperium in some ways, which anything's a smaller version of Twilight Imperium if you think about it.
I'd hate to see the bigger version of Twilight Imperium.
But it mixed in a lot of 4X stuff, you know, 4X being like, oh good, it's like, I think it's expand, explore, exterminate, and
excrete.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something there. But anyway, it's basically about you start at a home planet, you gather materials, you build fleets, you go explore space, you go mess with other people.
Right.
Done. And so it does a really good job of, with all of these different kind of counters, really simulating that experience of, you know, you don't know what's out in deep space. It could be dangerous. The kind of very unique thing about it is that almost in an old school way, you track what you buy every turn because there's a very big fog of war element. So like when you build a new ship, say I'm going to build this cruiser. All you see is I flip the token over and it's just a picture of a ship. Could be anything. And it's only when you encounter it in combat or scan it or somehow that you find out what it is.
Ah.
And there's also a counter underneath it that says how many of them there are. So that could be, that blip could be one little scout, or it could be four dreadnoughts. You're not sure. But the thing is, as you collect resources, every turn during an economic phase, you're writing down what you're buying so that when you encounter someone, you can, you know, if they want to check you, if they want to audit you, you can say, I bought it on this turn and all that.
Auditing, that's a fun aspect of a game.
Come on. You've not even played it. You need to give it a whirl.
I know. I'm just trying to be like you.
Yeah. Keep trying. Yeah. But it's neat because it just has the bookkeeping thing. It's not hard and it's not really that time consuming, but it adds to that fog of war and the fact that you can research all of these different tech trees. You know, you can go movement, you can go attacking, you can go exploration. There's all these different ways that you can go about winning. So it was just a really interesting experience. It was, like I said, it seemed like it was just a powered down TI, but it had a really good experience. And I liked it so much, I picked up a copy.
Wow.
So I hope to get that to the table again. But that, a learning game was, I think once everyone knows the rules, it's about an hour per player probably.
Okay.
Thereabouts. It was about about a 3.5 hour game between the three of us. But we played a full game.
And a great game to play at Extra Life because all you got is time.
Right? That's right. And sadly, that was the last major game that I played at Extra Life.
Oh,
I did not do well this year. Well, hear me out. The drive out, the 2-day drive out did not do anything. I didn't get any good sleep there. And I made it. I went from 8 a.m. and I left about 2 in the morning. So I didn't make it all the way, but I did do some pickup gaming afterwards that I think I got to my 24 hours. So right. Sadly to say, I had to wuss out. I'm thinking next year it might be more of an Extra Life weekend instead of just, because it's no fun to game when you're just completely drained.
Yeah.
You know,
as I'll be telling you about in just a minute.
Right. So that was the last game I played on Saturday. So John, what did you do to hold the game on banner high?
All right. So
especially since your flight left at what time on Sunday morning?
9:20 in the morning.
Not a smart decision.
No, my idea was just to stay up all the way through and just drive to the airport and get on the plane. So I took Cody back to the hotel at about 2 a.m. and came back, and still a huge crowd of people at 2 a.m.
I was impressed.
Last year, things really started to sort of peter out about that time, but the people were going strong. And so Sarah Yerington actually brought us breakfast at about 3 in the morning. She made some like quiches and had some like banana bread and that kind of stuff. So that was really cool for her to bring that stuff. And let's see, then the game started to get a little bit on the light side. one that wasn't so terribly light was we played a game of Eminent Domain. And I taught that one, played that one with Jeff Brabeau and with Chuck and with Tim, I believe, as well. And we enjoyed that game. That's another one that when you teach it for the first time, it just takes a while for folks to sort of get the grasp of what's going on. But I think overall everybody liked it. And so that was, I think it was a pretty close game as well. So that's still a lot of fun, that game. Eminent Domain. I got to learn how to play Martian Dice, which is another game from Tasty Minstrel Games. really comes across similarly to zombie dice, but it's just a different in the way that you're rolling. You're rolling dice to collect. You're supposed to be like a Martian that's collecting specimens. So you have cows and chickens and human beings. And the number of points that you get is the number of those three elements that you collect. But you know, you have to you can stop at any time, but as you're rolling, you have to combat like sort of what is it? It's like military forces that are trying to fight you. So you have to have alien ships that are going to fight back against those things. So you're competing with that at the same time. So it's still very, very light and fun, but I think I actually like it a little bit better than zombie dice because there seems like there's just a little bit more going on. So that was Martian Dice. Enjoyed that game. Played Dixit. Got to play Dixit with Russ Wakeland.
What time?
Oh, this is getting to be like 2 or 3 in the morning at this point.
Now, a few other games that were going on that we did neither of us participated in, but I wanted to let you know.
Oh, yeah.
Starting at about 11 o'clock, maybe midnight, folks started setting up, and I posted a picture of this on our Twitter and Facebook feeds, the biggest HeroScape map I've ever seen in my life.
Huge.
It was, I don't even know.
It had to be 5 or 6 sets or more of full sets.
Oh, I was thinking how many feet to a side.
Oh, if 5 or 6 feet to a side.
Yeah, I mean, it was just more. This huge. I mean, they were bringing in just these truckloads of terrain. It was great.
Yeah.
And didn't a group start up a game of Rune Wars at about 2:30 in the morning?
Yes, the same group that did one of the, at least part of the same group that did HeroScape. They played Rune Wars super late, and even had two guys that brought in War of the Ring.
Played, there you go.
At least the intro game of that.
Yeah, finished strong.
I know, right? So. I did not go for anything super heavy that late at night. You know, played Dixit, enjoyed that one. Played, I think, a 5 or 6 player game with that guy. Someone had set up a Crokinole board, and so I played a couple games of Crokinole. I was terrible at it. Yep. And I guess the guys I was playing with, they played every week.
Oh.
And so, I mean, I think me and my partner, we won, but he was carrying me entire way.
It wasn't
so.
Your first time playing, was it?
Oh, no, no, okay. No. But I just, these guys were really good. Mm-hmm. So, and plus, it was 3 in the morning. My eyes were starting to get a little bit bleary.
Yeah.
So my aim wasn't quite as good. After playing Dixit, we, what better game to pull out than 3 or 4 in the morning, but 7 Wonders. So, and teach it to 2 people who hadn't played it before.
Oh, jeez.
So we played that one. My buddy Jay, I think he really latched onto that one and enjoyed that guy.
Yeah,
so.
He was telling me he really liked it.
Yeah, so 7 Wonders, always a good game. And then at this point, you know, we're really starting to get down to the wire here. You know, it's now about 5 in the morning. Folks are leaving. Eric Summer had to go because he was driving to. He had to pick up his son, and he had quite a distance he had to go to. So he took off, and some other folks left, and we were left with a group of maybe 7 or 8 total people in the store. So I ended up playing a couple of games with Chuck and with Jay, who those guys, they were stalwart to the very end there.
Those New England folks, they're made of stronger stuff, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, we played a game of No Thanks, mm-hmm. Which I was just terrible at. I don't think I'm really that bad at No Thanks, but I was really bad at it at that time. To the point where they were kind of looking at me like, really, you're going to take that card, really? And then my last game that I played at about 6:30, 7 in the morning was Quarriors. And I nearly fell asleep 3 times during the game, including, I believe, I fell asleep in the middle of my turn.
Nicely done.
So it was not the best game of Quarriors, but it was fine. So that wrapped up Extra Life for me. I think there was still a group playing Bonanza as I was getting ready to leave. And so I took off and drove to the airport, and I don't remember any of the flight back. I don't remember the plane taking off in Manchester. I woke up one time, and then I woke up when the plane hit the ground. So it was,
that's the way to fly.
It was nice, but it was, yeah, the whole day was pretty much shot at that point when I got home. So you said you did have a little bit of after, because you stayed until Monday in Manchester, right?
Or yep.
In New Hampshire.
So so my makeup gaming to kind of make up for the rest of my 24 hours is...
How was sleeping there at 3 in the morning?
It was very good.
Okay.
Thank you. I woke up nice and rested about 10.
Oh, jeez.
And so Jay, he and I played a game of Dungeon Quest. And
I don't think you like that game.
I gave it another whirl, and I like it more than I thought. I mean, it's basically Talisman in a Dungeon. It's a pressure luck game. It's very light, but for what it is, it's a fun game. So,
okay.
It was fun. We played a mini games of Crokinole, because I didn't realize the set had been busted out the night before. So, so we played several games of that. And then I went over to visit Russ and Nicole Wakeland's home, and We played, let's see, we played Fleet Captains.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And we played, oh, yes. He had heard about my memoir, you know, how with Memoir 44 I was kind of bleh. So I had mentioned I'd like to give Battles of Westeros another go.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's one we'd reviewed way back when. So I'm like, oh, I want to see if I like it better now that I've read the books, now that I really don't care for the memoir system so much. I still don't really care for Battles of Westeros. I think it's just too fiddly for what it is. It's got a lot of dumb little rules. And I still hate the banner turning. It's such a stupid, you
know.
Don't
like the banner turning.
No. Not a fan. But, you know, I think I'm going to look, you know, I've tried the LCG, I've tried Battles of Westeros. I think I'm just going to have to wait for this Game of Thrones second edition board game. Because I think that'll be a lot of fun, and I want that. That'll be my Game of Thrones fix in the gaming room. So I think that's all we played, and then I headed back. I did come home not only with a copy of Space Empires, but with a copy of, or not with a copy, but a Battle Foam bag.
Oh, yeah.
I bit the bullet and got one because some of my miniatures didn't do so well on the trip. And so the D6G guys should be celebrating. I bought a Battle Foam bag. I'm going to get some of the special inserts for it. And it's a really nice bag. I mean, as far as bags go, it's... Yeah,
you got the same bag I have, right?
I did.
Yeah, no, it's a good bag.
It's a solid bag. So, yeah, that was Extra Life.
Now, the best part about the whole thing, we talked about all these great games we played. Yes. Cody and I both met our goal for our fundraising, and I think we had set it at like $240. Uh-huh. I think we each raised around $300, yep. So that's a $600 and some odd for Riley Children's Hospital here in Indianapolis, a great hospital that we support. Also, I think I had said in the previous episode that we were kind of doing it partially on behalf of a friend of ours who had a little baby that's still in the hospital. This is a baby that was born at 27 weeks, but only 1 pound. She's been in the hospital now for a couple of months now. She's up to 4 pounds now and wow. Still growing and doing well. And the folks at Riley are taking really good care of her. So thanks so much for all of you who donated. Extra Life as a whole raised over $1.1 million this year.
That's crazy.
Which is more than all of the previous years combined that they've done Extra Life. I think last year was $400,000+. So they just completely blew it out of the water. So thanks so much for your support. And it's a great event. And when it comes around next year, if you, you know, if you know, again, this has mostly been a video game thing, but, you know, with our Game Salute team did very well in the board game and card game realm. You know, if you want to host something like this in your own hometown, feel free to do that. And when it comes back around again, extra-life.org, form a team and sign up and raise some money to heal some kids and have a great time playing games. So we want to say very much thank you to all of the folks at Myriad Games and just all the New Hampshire crew that have really become kind of like a second family to us in a different part of the world. What a great opportunity to get to meet folks and become friends through gaming. So
thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, if you remember on the last episode, it was the last episode, wasn't it?
Yes.
Of Game On with Cody and John, we talked a little bit about a contest. I think it's time to pick a winner.
Let's do it. All right, so last episode, we gave you our annual top 11 games of all time list. And we had two great lists. Mine was just a little better. But we...
No.
Okay. But we hashed out, and we wanted to know your top 11. And so we ran the contest. Tasty Minstrel Games has provided us a copy with Eminent Domain to give away. And we decided we would pick someone at random from the Game On inbox. And we had everyone send in a copy of their top 11, anyone who wanted to enter a contest. Sent us a copy of their top 11, and we got a lot of varied games.
Great responses.
We have picked one at random, but before we reveal the winner, John is going to read you all of the unique number one games from all the different lists. So pop some popcorn, settle in your chair, and go.
All right, we're going to go real fast here. We have Neuroshima Hex, Lords of Vegas, Race for the Galaxy, Agricola, Galaxy Trucker, Battlestar Galactica, Washington's War, Seven Wonders, Dominion, Bridge.
Really?
it's a game. Puerto Rico, Power Grid, Space Hulk, Chaos in the Old World, Crokinole, Warhammer Quest, A Game of Thrones, The Board Game, Descent, Indonesia, London, Tobago, Alien Frontiers, Here I Stand, Airlines Europe, Carcassonne, War of the Ring, Magic the Gathering, Glory to Rome, Star Wars, The Collectible Card Game.
Oh, that was good. That was a good game.
The Decipher one? Yeah, that one's pretty good. Lord of the Rings, the living card game. Betrayal at House on the Hill. Really?
Yeah.
Hopefully not the new version.
Come on, guys.
Gosh. Sid Meier's Civilization, Through the Ages.
Yeah,
that's right. Combat Commander Europe, Werewolf, R-U-A, comma. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the board game.
that one surprised me a bit.
Yeah. Hammer of the Scots, Blood Bowl, Le Havre, Courier, Stone Age, War Machine, The Game of Thrones, The Living Card Game, Small World, Kingsburg, Civilization. Some guy said Civilization. We weren't sure if that was Advanced Civilization or Sid Meier, so we put it separately. Settlers of Catan, Fresco, Cyclades, Tons der Hornochsen.
I got it. It has like two moose on the front. I got it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Summoner Wars, Bonanza, Go, The Resistance, Ascension.
The Resistance is the number one game.
Someone had it as number
strong.
One. Ascension Chronicle of the Godslayer, Merchant of Venus. That one wasn't from Eric, by the way.
I was surprised.
Twilight Struggle, Reef Encounter, StarCraft the Board Game, Star Trek Expeditions,
Ooh.
Pandemic, Rune Wars, Kaelus, Age of Steam.
Kaelus?
Yeah, Kaelus.
Come on.
It was not from Ryan Sturm either.
Wow. And
Age of Steam,
our show, huh?
Neither was Age of Steam. Cosmic Encounter, Ghost Stories, Steam. Not Age of Steam, but Steam. Cribbage, Monopoly Deal.
Okay.
Innovation, Merchants and Marauders, Android, Brass, Battle
Android.
Lore. Android. Nice. Brass, Battle Lore, Britannia, Dixit, Wits and Wagers, and Time's Up Title Recall.
To name a few.
to name them all.
All right. So out of all of those, we picked... Oh, it's curious. So what was the number one game? Because those were the unique ones, but obviously more than one person voted. So what was the winner?
Okay, yeah. So just for an example, I mean, like Race for the Galaxy got 3 votes and Cosmic Encounter had 4. But then the number one overall game as far as pulling all these together is Dominion. Dominion, there were 6 people that picked that as their number one game. But I think the reason why we read this list is that we just think it's amazing that we had like 120, 130 entries, something like that to this contest. Mm-hmm. And look at all of the unique games, that, you know, the various kinds of games that were picked as a number one game. I think that's great. You know, I think it's that there's not just one overly hyped game. Not everybody said Agricola or Puerto Rico or whatever, but there's just a wide variety of games. You know, we promote the well-rounded gamer. You guys are definitely well-rounded gamers.
Obviously.
Yeah.
My goodness.
So
here's your winner.
Okay.
And our... Oh, hello there. And our winner here.
Yeah, microphone fail over there, huh?
A little bit. All right. Steady, steady.
Ready?
Is Andrew Heim. I think it's Heim. I'm going to go with Heim. From Andrew Santa Clara, Heim. California, home of the 6-time Drum Corps International World Champion, Santa Clara Vanguard.
All right. Congratulations, Andrew.
Andrew, well done. And go Vanguard. So here is his top 11 list.
All right.
And we're going to comment on it. Sorry, Andrew. If you want the copy of the game, you got to suffer a little
bit. You got to run through this gauntlet, yeah.
Number 11 is Tide of Iron. Neither of us have played it.
Never played it. Yeah.
Looks good. It looks kind of like Fantasy Flight does Memoir.
Yeah, something like that.
I've tried it. Number 10 is Titan. Great Ameritrash game. The father of the Ameritrash line.
Never played it.
Oh, it's fun. It's good dumb fun, yeah.
Okay.
Number 9 is Julius Caesar. It's a block game from Columbia Games.
Never played that.
I got nothing
Columbia,
on that.
Columbia, that's a Hammer of the Scots company,
it is.
Right? Yeah.
Number 8 is Combat Commander Europe.
Okay. I have a copy of that, and we may pull that out for the War Game episode.
It's coming.
It is. We're playing War Games, listeners.
That's right.
We haven't talked about them yet, but we're playing them.
We are playing.
Behind the scenes.
Number 7 is Puerto Rico. Not everything can be a diamond. That's fine.
Okay.
Number 6 is Cyclades.
Haven't played that one.
I've played that one.
Oh, have you?
It's good. It's a really nice blend of Euro and Ameritrash and dudes on a map sort of thing.
Is that a cooperative?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a different one, I think.
Yeah,
okay.
All right, number 5 is Sid Meier's Civilization, which got a lot of love.
Yeah, it did.
It was way up there.
Yeah, we had quite a few.
Number 4 is Kaelus. I guess.
Yeah.
Number 3, Dominant Species.
I've heard so many good things about that
I've heard
game.
So many bad things about it.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't look great. But we still got to send him the game, I guess. Number 2 is Navigador.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the...
Navigator?
One of the... What's the guy's name? Mac Gertz is a Rondel series, yeah.
And number 1 was
Le Havre.
The Favre,
which is a fine game.
And other ones, the honorable mentions were Eminent Domain, apparently he's played it, The Lord of the Ring, LCG, Airlines Europe, A Few Acres of Snow, Glory to Rome, and King of Tokyo.
Wow.
Were all made the honorable mention list. So your list had some ups and downs, but hey, you're going to get a copy of Eminent Domain.
That's right.
So go ahead and send us your info, Andrew, and we will get you a copy of Eminent Domain Lickety Split.
Yeah, just send us your address and we'll send that right out to you. And thanks to everyone who entered. It was really one of our most successful contests ever. So,
yeah, thank you all.
Yeah, thanks for sharing us your top 11s.
All right, now before we go, we talked about all this fun we had at Extra Life and having all these people here and meeting listeners of the show, and it was a lot of fun. Still, meeting listeners of the show, the best part of doing it.
Yes,
I think. And we'll have another chance to do that if you join us for the first Game On Game Day.
Yes.
Now we've had we've talked about the Game On Game Night that we've started locally, and
still have great response to that. We usually get between 10 and 20 people.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday, or every other Tuesday.
Every time you meet.
Every time we meet.
Right. And so we're going to do an all-day sort of game day. And it's Saturday, November 19th, and it's on the west side of Indianapolis. And all the information for it can be found on our website, gameonpodcast.com. If you click on the link that says Game On Game Day, it'll give you all of the information, links to hotels nearby and all that. It's at the Avon United Methodist Church in the big, wonderful basement area where we because it has to be a basement. We're getting
this, exactly. Right? It's like a split level thing, though.
So it's not a complete. It's more like first floor. But anyway, so we would love for you to join us there. We're gonna have a lot of people there. We're going to be playing all sorts of games. It's going from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and probably some extracurricular gaming after that at other satellite locations. So, gameonpodcast.com, click the link to the Game On Game Day, and we want to see you there on Saturday, November 19th.
It's going to be great. We're going to play lots of big, long games.
I'm excited. You know, there's going to be all sorts of games going on. And a ping pong tournament, probably.
That is the
unofficial game of the Game On Game Night.
Yeah, I think there was some talk of maybe a Dominion tournament or something like that, too. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, so it's in the planning stages right now, so check us out on the 19th of November. So I think that just about wraps up our episode for this one. This is kind of a different one with the long rundown, right? Yeah. But was there any other games and geekery that you've done this that you'd like to talk about?
Yes.
Before we go?
On my flight home, I finished Stormfront, the first novel of the Dresden Files.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, and I really liked it.
Did you?
So you were right. You win. and you have handed over the last... I'm going to get the next few books from you and read those because I really like the first one. So.
It will only get better from here. So
well done.
That's great.
Anything else I've done? Not really. No. Oh, comics. Still, I've weeded down my list a little bit, but I'm still really enjoying the reboot from DC. Batgirl is probably still my favorite title. I think it's a really strong title, but the Batman is also really good. Like, I'm more of a Superman guy.
The Batman.
But I'm liking some of these Bat titles, strangely enough. So it's still good. And if you're interested in getting to comics, this DC 52 is a really good jumping on point.
Ooh.
What about you?
I finished Ready Player One, which I've talked about the last couple of episodes. It was really good. Like I said, if you're into 80s culture, that's definitely the book for you. You'll really dig it. I did sort of find that I thought the book... It almost kind of over-glorified 80s pop culture. Like, if I had to hear the guy write the word classic one more time, I mean, that was just like, from that classic video game, the classic 80s TV series. Like, okay, we got it. You really liked 80s stuff. But the story itself was very cool, and the way it was set in this sort of near-future world, it was good. It was a solid story. They even, at the end, I think... left it open for a possible sequel.
Ready Player 2.
Yeah, but I think that it really stands alone as a good, just self-contained work as well. You know, I mentioned to listeners, you know, suggestions that I'd like suggestions for different books to read. One that I just picked up from a listener who sent me information about a series called the 20 Palaces series. And the first book's called Child of Fire. And I had other things that were sort of queued up that I was thinking about getting, but then I looked on the BarnesandNoble.com and that book, Child of Fire, was 99 cents. So I had to snatch it up.
Sure.
So I started the first about 10 pages into that, and it's pretty good so far. I think he said that for fans of Dresden, that it might be a similar sort of a feel there. So thanks for that recommendation. That is about it for me. I've been trying to teach myself how to play Earth Reborn.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's a meaty rule book, but hopefully we'll be able to get that one to the table. So anyway, that just about wraps up this episode. You know, and a little bit of a, you know, 3 week hiatus there, but we're back on our
catch up on sleep
normal schedule. Yeah, and you can join us in 2 weeks where we'll be talking about lots of other great things in the world of gaming and geekery. And hey, we love making this podcast for you. And until next time,
game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.